This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Peter Higgins and you can find me on X at Conkers3. And it is the 9th of June and I'm here as always with my fantastic co-host, Henry Viola Hare, who you can find at HT Viola. How are you doing, Henry?
I am very well, thank you, Peter. Great to be back with you. Great to be back with the audience.
Good to have you too, sir. We had a discussion, Henry, after our fantastic visit to the City of London, where we were invited to a very, very, I would say, superb event held by Blue Whale Capital. Stephen Yu invited me, and I insisted on you being there, and there you were.
There I was.
Yeah, so we had a masterclass on all things AI, the AI stack, what's needed, what's not needed, and the bottlenecks that's occurring in there. So, ladies and gents, Henry's suggestion was, let's talk about what's going on in the AI space and talk about it from a non-AI investor's perspective, which I thought was an absolutely phenomenal idea. So that's what we're going to do today. Is that correct, Anne?
That is indeed correct. We're looking at artificial intelligence from the perspective of a UK private investor. So lots to enjoy. Stay tuned in. We've got some interesting names for you. Peter's picked a few out this evening that I've never heard of before. So I think the audience are in for a treat.
Fantastic. Fantastic, Henry. That's what we're going to do, ladies and gents. Thank you for coming back to us. We need to give some feedback, really, with regards to podcast 180, which we had with, I'm not sure how to describe him. He's such a lovely individual, super smart, and the job he's doing in the City for Winter Flood is absolutely amazing. Joe Winkley's podcast, Henry. I know you came away absolutely beaming.
I really was. I really, really was. I mean, I love it when we have nice guests. We always have nice guests on the show, but Joe, for me, was particularly friendly, particularly knowledgeable, a pleasure to talk to, and seems to have gone down a real treat with the audience as well. So I was thrilled with episode 180. And I do hope we can get Joe back on the show in the future, because I thought he was an excellent addition to our humble podcast.
Absolutely, absolutely. To get a heavyweight like that, head of capital markets at Winterflood was significant. So we appreciate that with him coming to see us and sharing his insights. And then, Henry, we had some news. Did you see the news just a week and a bit later as to what happened there?
I did.
Did you see it? The noise around SpaceX. Can we get access to it? The UK investors have been neglected. Da-da-da-da-da. Bang. Winterflood's announced that via Marex, they get access to allow British investors to buy into the Blockbuster IPO. But why? Because Marex owns Winterflood, which will act as, to quote them, the public offer platform operator via their wrap platform, which will enable UK investment platforms and brokers to access the SpaceX IPO for individual investors. Wow.
Couldn't have been more topical having Joe on talking about IPOs and then that news breaks. Huge congratulations to the team over there. I mean, it's quite a coup to land an IPO coordination deal of that size. I forget how many billions it is that's been coordinated globally, but to be the UK distributor of a deal of this magnitude is really quite impressive. And it just goes to show, actually, how complex the City can be, I think. You know, we as retail investors, we've got our apps and we click these buttons and things happen. But behind the scenes, there are whole hordes of interesting businesses like Winterflood and Marex that are whirring away day and night to help us access the markets.
Absolutely. Now, I think you pulled up a piece of feedback that we had regarding Joe's podcast, of the many that we received, one that you thought was needed and merited sharing with our audience, Henry. Do you want to share
that? Absolutely. I mean, it was our good friend Dave Sumners. And I've just lost it again, but bear with me. Here we are. Really informative, guys. I hadn't heard of the Winterflood Wrap platform before. Really innovative. I've signed up already. I also love the fact that Joe loves investment trusts as much as I do. Great to hear, Dave. Thank you ever so much. And we're glad you enjoyed the interview with Joe.
Fantastic, fantastic. Thank you ever so much there, Dave. And thank you for your continued support. Later on in this pod, we are going to talk about or we're going to announce six individuals that have won 1 month subscription to the ShareScope platform, as is the data providers that sponsor our pod. And that's for them who have been supporting us immensely over the first 6 months of the year thus far. And going forward, we'll try and do this a bit more on a monthly basis regarding who's been supporting us. I.e. the next time we speak will be for June / the beginning of July, and we'll announce that person next month regarding them supporting us, retweeting, commenting, etc. But we're going to announce six individuals going forward later on in this pod. But first, as we announced at the beginning, we're going to talk about all things AI, but from a non-AI investor perspective, following our fantastic event that we attended with Blue Whale Cap. And the reason why we're going to talk about it is that everyone's focused on what's happening with Meta, Google, Apple, etc. And now regarding all things AI related to what is going to be the biggest IPO ever, I think, regarding SpaceX. But all the conversations are currently this week and last month, and will be up until the IPO later in the week, all be about SpaceX. I'm going to try and avoid that conversation and look at the alternatives and space in, sector stocks that could be utilized. One of the conversations we had and was had at the Blue Whale event we went to was around, and you know, essentially AI is becoming the essential infrastructure. And there's a pyramid, yeah, a stack of layers. And at the top of that are the apps, essentially, the Claude AI, Gemini, etc., and Tesla, etc.
So these are the things that you and I would access and see as consumers, absolutely, right? These are the things we've got on our phone to access AI.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then they've got the model layer, which is OpenAI, Google, Anthropic, Meta, DeepSeek. Infrastructure, you've got the Azures, AWS, Google Cloud, Dell, Oracle, Supermicro, Cisco, etc. Compute level, everyone talks about NVIDIA, AMD, Broadcom, Samsung, Intel, Marvel, and the hottest one right now, for all intents and purposes, is SK Hynix regarding memory. Yeah. And of course, the one that's multibagged, I think, tenfold, if not more so, in the past 18 months, SanDisk, which was a written off memory company. But the one that we want to, well, I'm going to focus on in this segment of the pod, is really about the bit that powers all of the pyramid, the base of the pyramid that powers all of it, what's going on, right? Is what, folks? What do they all need? They need energy. They need power, right? And the go-to company in that segment in the US at the moment, or at least the top two, one of the top two, is Constellation Energy Group, ticker symbol CEG. And if you can pull that up briefly, Henry, I'm not going to talk about it too much because I want to focus on the others in that bottleneck space of energy. So we're now got, for those of you that are not on YouTube, we're now going over to the shared screens and showing the companies on ShareScope on the platform with pulling up the summary page, etc. So this is a behemoth company. I'm just going to give you the data on this one now. And it's sitting there, Constellation, at 89.5 billion market cap company. Yeah, it's got a smallish yield of 0.7%, and it's got a PE. You just go down a little bit, up a little bit for me, Henry. Forward PE. What's the forward PE there?
I've not got the PE on this particular screen. Bear with me. The PE is. It's sat on 26.7 on the latest results.
Yeah, so that's one of the big behemoths that's in the space, and the if you look at the actual movement of the price this year, you can see after all of the noise and it being quiet, it up to 2022-23, it suddenly then went off and moved rapidly up. What have we got there, Henry? 91% in 2024.
Yeah.
And then subsequently another 54% in 2025. And it's cooled down a little bit this year, sitting just shy of 30% down year to date. So what I'm going to focus on regarding that one is the company that's absolutely moving and shaking up the actual industry of energy in the US, then talk about some others that we may be able to tap into that's less expensive or haven't moved as aggressively. So the next stock I want you to pull up there, Henry, for me, is Next Era Energy Inc. And the ticker symbol is NEE. And I'll talk a bit more in detail with this one. Okay. So let me just read what it says here regarding the company. Next Era Energy is an electric power and energy infrastructure company. It operates through its only owned subsidiaries, Next Era Energy Resources, LCC, and Next Era Energy Transmission, LCC, and Florida Power and Light Company. Its segments include, which is the Next Era Resources one, and the Florida Power and Light. The Florida Light segment is a rate-regulated electricity utility engaged in generation, transmission, distribution, and sale of electric energy in Florida. FLP has approximately 35,052 megawatts of net generation capacity and over 91,000 circuit miles of transmission and conduction lines and 921 substation. And it goes on, including battery storage in the US and Canada, all the different assets and renewable fuels. It owns, develops, and constructs and operates rate-regulated transmissions facilities in North America. Now, the reason why I want to talk about this one, and I'll talk about the metrics on it in a minute, although you can see this on the screen, is because last month, Henry, just touched on the fact that Constellation is worth $89 billion. Last month, Next Era decided, because of the significance of energy and the fact that the behemoths, the Mag 7 companies and others, Fortune 500 companies, are basically setting themselves up, going to the electric companies, paying a premium for 5, 10, 15-year contracts. It's made an $85 billion purchase acquisition of one of its peers, Dominion Energy. Yeah. Okay. So that's what it's gone and done, essentially, to make sure that it's got the presence to be able to do that. So basically what they were saying, Henry, with this particular purchase, that it creates the world's largest regulated electricity utility business by market capitalization and one of the world's largest energy infrastructure companies with an unmatched operating platform benefiting customers across the UK. Yeah. So that's what stuck out for me. You've got a company now that's sitting with a market cap, which is not insignificant, at 175. It's now adding another significant chunk there with that particular purchase for $67 billion, which hasn't concluded yet. And it's currently sitting on forward PE of 20.9, forecast dividend of 2.9. And it's looking to end up being what will be three times the size of Constellation Energy.
Yeah.
When it's finished with this acquisition.
I mean, it's big, but I mean, I think
big already,
you know, this really shows how AI electricity demand is changing the utilities sector for me, because this isn't a business I know terrifically well, Next Era Energy. But as I understand it, it's actually pretty well diversified. It's got renewables, it's got batteries, it's got gas, it's got nuclear. They're funding all sorts of different power sources in order to maintain stable grid capacity.
Absolutely.
And, you know, this recent investment that they've just made, this recent acquisition, really goes to show just how much demand there is for the, I mean, ChatGPT, for example, these large language models, they're not persistent if they lose power. If you can't keep a data center active, it forgets, as I understand it, if you can't keep it powered, it basically forgets what it is. It forgets the conversation you've had. It's not got persistent storage in the same way that traditional storage media does. And so you have to have a constant power supply. You can't risk the thing going down. You know, one of the other things that caught my eye is that NextEra Energy is also pursuing what they describe as a data center hub strategy. And they've said that the US Department of Commerce has selected them to build 9.5 gigawatts of new gas-fired generators to serve large load demand in Texas and Pennsylvania. And those are projects that are connected to the Japanese government's US investment commitment. So these are huge
Huge,
contracts.
huge, 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 huge contrast. Is this precisely what I pulled that one out and didn't focus on talking about Constellation, Henry? So you've now got this company buying Dominion Energy, in it, Henry, and the combined company will benefit from the industry's most diversified growth platform, as you've said, right? Renewables, including uranium and all the rest of it, nuclear energy, driving 9% plus adjusted earnings per share growth expectations through to 2032. And that's without the additional things that they might do between now and 2032. But they're already saying we're almost guaranteeing here 9% growth going forward. If you compound that over the next 6 years or so, and even the share price compounds at that rate, you're looking at a significantly higher share price going forward. And you know what? The stuff that they don't need, Henry, that's a little bit outside of the old sort of metrics that we're looking at, they can sell for a couple of billion here and a couple of billion there, reduce the debt, and so on and so on and so forth. Because that's the bit that sticks out for me on that chart, grid
Well,
that you've
my
got
God,
there
if you look at the total borrowing.
is the debt level. I knew that you were going to go there, which is why I was just about to say that's the bit that would be concerning, the debt levels. But they're able to service that, but they're going to want to bring it down, Henry, because
They're
they've
going
seen
to
it
have to
coming and
bring
they've
it
been
down. My God.
ramping up the debt because they know that they can actually get the actual services in and the revenue in, but they're going to want to reduce that going forward. That's my only downside to it, but yeah.
I mean, that's massively levered. I mean, you've got total borrowing there of $95 billion, and cash of $2 billion. You know, although you've got a lot of regulated demand here, and there are, you know, demand for utilities tends to be fairly stable, and therefore, you know, you can lever these things far more than a traditional, say, manufacturing business. That is still an eye-watering amount of debt, especially in a world where interest rates are going in the wrong direction.
Wrong direction, not coming down. Agreed, agreed.
Very
But
interesting one, though.
yeah, I would dare say they've got some of that debt fixed and pushed out,
Oh yeah, they'll definitely have pegged that on, you
yeah,
know, long
absolutely
term.
pegged it. But the stuff that's not pegged and as comes up for renewal, that's when that you start quaking, going, oh, we got this at 2%, and it's now, 3 years later, we're coming up to 2029. What's the rate now? If it's not been resolved and things aren't cooled down, it could well be 4 or 5% more that they're looking to pay. Right, you wanted me to carry on with this, so let me carry on with another one that we can speak about in that same space because I'm focusing on the energy side, and you're going to talk about some others later on. The second stock I want to talk about, and also this stock has had a reasonable sort of time of it, is a what is one called Siemens Energy AG, and that's a German-based company, Energy Henry, sorry, ticker symbol ENR. Oh, do we have it on there? Not sure. Not sure.
I think it's that one.
Can you? Yeah, you can do that. You can do the. I didn't think it'd come up as ERND, but you can use the summary page. It'll be exactly the same. The company is engaged in energy technology, has four business areas: gas services, grid technologies, transformation of industry, and Siemens Gamesa. Yeah, gas services provides activities related to gas and steam turbines, such as producing new gas and steam turbines. Grid technologies demand growth of electricity, electrification, decarbonization, and digitalization, which includes high voltage direct current, which is HVDC, transmission systems, grid connections for offshore wind farms, and many more. Yeah, and I think most people know what Gamesa bit offers: the design, engineering, manufacturing, and installation of products. The company also provides service including management, operation, and maintenance. The regional breakdown is used for reporting purposes. Is Siemens is EMA, Americas, Asia, and Australasia. Yeah. So that is one of the companies I think could be very, very interesting for people to look at, Henry. I would like to know if you go to the summary page, Henry, what you think of the metrics there regarding this company, which is sitting at essentially 126 billion euros, because some of the metrics there don't look too bad.
Don't at all.
The
forecast
debt levels
growth
there is in green. Forward yield is a bit small, really, for that summit. But the EBIT sitting there absolutely popping. Pre-tax at 203%. EPS at 277. I'm looking at that going, why isn't any more people talking about Siemens Energy?
Because it's a sleepy business. I mean, this is probably the cleanest of the two that we've talked about so far for the AI infrastructure theme. I mean, this business sells equipment that connects, stabilizes, you know, expands power systems. It sells transformers and substations and switchgear and gas turbines, all that kind of stuff. You know, now data centers need power, but I'm sure you've heard, Peter, the issue is often actually connecting things to the grid, not just generating power for the grid. Certainly in the UK, there's like a 3-year backlog of some sites being connected. And all this connection requires equipment that Siemens manufactures. There's a shortage of grid equipment, you know, especially from what I've heard in the construction industry, there's a massive shortage of power transformers.
I mean, you just touched on it. The unique point about this company, and you just touched on it, let me expand, is the fact they've got layer after layer after layer after layer within the infrastructure and energy play. There's something somewhere along the line, along that food chain. Yeah, they're involved in that supply chain for that industry. They're not just going, that's how special, and that's all we do. They've got their fingers in all of that cycle, all the way through it, supply chain. Yeah. They're involved in almost every aspect. And you're thinking, wow, how did they manage to maneuver themselves in such a way to do that?
Well, interestingly, these forecast growth figures are astronomical. I mean, forecast earnings per share growth of 277%. I mean, it's spectacular, really. And for a profitable business, this looks really, really attractive. I mean, they've recently described data center grid connection delays as, you know, a key bottleneck. And they've noted that in most countries that they are working in, new data centers can wait several years to connect to the grid. And that's going to be a huge bottleneck for companies like OpenAI and Anthropic that want to provide these models on mobile phones anywhere you are. You know, if you've not got the data centers to process the data and actually run the large language models, you can't keep connecting customers at the astronomical rates that they want to, because the system will simply fall over. It'll lock up. It won't be able to process the amount of data that's going through it.
Absolutely that. So, yeah, so it's definitely interesting one. Just put up the chart there for me just briefly, Henry. Just there. Yeah, yeah. So you can see it's had a phenomenal run from sleepy for 2021, 22, 23. It then pops in 2024 up 319%, then follows again last year in 2025 by another 140%, and already the year to date it's up 23%. So honestly,
that's what, a 450% increase in 3 years, give or take.
Yep, that's the one, Henry. It's done phenomenally well.
Yeah.
So you're looking at a 5-year CAGR, if you know, of 42.6%. You're looking at a 3-year CAGR. What you've got there, 450, 470, divide that by three. You're looking at 100% CAGR over the last 3 years and more.
Astronomical.
Yeah.
And I don't know a single person that's talking about Siemens as an investment. Not one.
Absolutely. It needs to be looked at. That's ticker symbol ENR on DAX, folks, to go and investigate. I can't see Europe requiring less power going forward. In fact, they're going to probably need more going forward. That Siemens is the go-to company, or one of the go-to companies to investigate on that front. All right, Henry wants me to carry on. I feel like I've been talking forever here. I'm going to need a drink in a minute, Henry. You ready?
Go for it.
So we go to the third company in the energy space, and this is one that everyone should know, so I'm not going to spend too much time on it. And this is Centrica. Yeah, ticker symbol CNA, if my memory serves me well.
Correct.
United Kingdom-based integrated energy company. The company's British Gas Services and Solutions segment provides the installation, repair and maintenance of domestic central heating and related appliances, and the provision of fixed fee maintenance, breakdown and service and insurance contracts in the United Kingdom. Its British Gas Energy segment supplies gas and electricity to residential and small business customers in the UK. Its Bord Gáis Energy segment supplies gas and electricity to residential and commercial industrial customers in the Republic of Ireland. Its Centrica Business Solutions segment supplies gas and electricity to business customers in the United Kingdom. Its Centrica Energy segment is focused on the procurement, trading and optimization. Very important word there, Henry. Optimization of energy in the United Kingdom and Europe. Its upstream segment is engaged in the sale of power generated from nuclear assets in the United Kingdom and gas storage in the United Kingdom. Something very significant happened here last month, Henry, which is why I wanted to talk about this one. And you'll be able to see this in a news segment if you want to go across to it. Centrica last month acquired Severn combined cycle gas turbine power station for approximately 370 million. Now, this sounds like small cheese, really, when we talked about that earlier acquisition of 67, was it 67 billion by NextEra of Dominion? And they're making a 370 million pound acquisition. But they did so anyway, increasing its flexible generation portfolio to 4 gigawatts. I must explain what a gigawatt is, by the way, for those that don't know what a gigawatt is, for our newer listeners. A gigawatt is a unit of power, and it is equal to 1 billion watts. Power measures the rate at which energy is generated, used, or transferred. So that gives them enough flexible generation portfolio up to 4 gigawatts. This particular purchase of 370 million was for the Severn plant, the 850 megawatts plant, which was commissioned in 2010 and is a highly efficient UK combined cycle gas turbine capable of providing flexible power generation and system services with expected average capacity markets, will generate about 35 billion annually until 2030, and annual EBITDA of 30 to 60 million from 2027. Funded from existing cash resources and expected to be EPS accretive from the first 4 year post completion, and aligned with Centrica's financial framework, with capital investment expected to continue at 1.1 billion this year. So yeah, 5 year CAGR, Henry, if you go back to the financial details on Centrica, the 5-year CAGR, Henry, is 28.8 versus the UK FTSE, which is 7.6.
Done terrifically well. I'm really annoyed about Centrica because I used to own this and I sold this years and years and years ago, way before 2021. And I kind of wish I hadn't.
Why? Explain the why.
Their debt was going in the wrong direction. Their revenue was falling. They were shedding tens of thousands of customers every quarter. It was a real basket case.
Yeah, it was, Henry, and you're absolutely spot on. If you do me a favour now to explain this to the people that are on YouTube, go to the chart, and go out to 10 years.
Have a look how low it got. About here, I think.
Right. It went sub a pound all the way down to sub 50 pence. What's the low that you can see on there?
That's 33 pence a share.
33 pence in 2020. So lockdown, when you think everyone's going to be at home, therefore they're going to be using more power, and need more things servicing because they're using it more frequently. The share price, because of its debt load, absolutely crippled it. And that, if I recall, and somebody will correct me on this, please do. Please get in touch with us.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
I'm sure they did a fundraise back then that was significantly diluted. But as you can see, from sub 30p or near 30p, the share price has been higher than £2 in the past 5.5/6 years. So for those that bought it at the bottom, huge congratulations to you. We're now talking about it after it's gone up sixfold. You might think Henry and Pete are idiots. But I think there's a continuation growth phase that they're going to be going through because of the energy that's needed by residential, commercial, SMEs, etc. going forward. And if they sort out their debt levels and continue to service their debt, I think they could do well and head back above £2 again.
They're on net cash. So ever since 2021, they've been building their cash pile and dropping their debt rapidly. They've actually got net cash of 1.3 billion, which is down a lot from the 2.7 they had the year before. But net cash is net cash, guys. And if you look at the red chart on the right, this is total borrowing. Their total borrowing has dropped from 7 billion to under 3 since 2014. So this is fundamentally going in a very, very different direction now.
Absolutely. So I think that share price could continue to accelerate. And the other thing here, Henry, if you go to the summary page, please, mate. If you look at the size of it, and I'm going to, again, go back to Next Era Energy buying Dominion for $67 billion. It's a small cap. It's one of our FTSE 100 stocks, but in the global scale, it's a small cap. It's sitting there, market cap at 8.4. Now, my question would be, and I know how, I'm going to say this and people can shoot me, how stupid our governments historically have been, whether they're red or blue, right? Would they ever allow a significant chunk of our infrastructure, energy infrastructure, to be purchased by an overseas predator? Would they ever allow, mate, the jury's out. The jury is absolutely out. Because if somebody came out tomorrow and said, we want to buy Centrica for 12 billion, for 14 billion, for double the price that it is now, what's the government going to say to the shareholders and the highest significant holders? Go back, please, Henry. Who's the top there?
BlackRock
of all people, who've got their fingers in almost every pie. I'm not surprised Goldman Sachs is not in there, but it's not. And JP Morgan are in there.
Yeah.
Anyway, I rest my case. Henry, you've got me going for another one. I'm gonna rest for the next half an hour when you get on here, by the way. Right. Last but not least, on the energy sector, another one that you should all be aware of, I'm not going to spend too much time on this one either, is National Grid, ticker symbol NG dot, Henry. There you go. And what do we have here? We have a 57. Oh, sorry, you've got 59 there as the number. Sorry, my maths is incorrect. 59.7 billion market cap company, Henry. Forecast yield of 4.1%. Where's the PE gone to? I've got the PE as around 13 in there.
I've not
What's
got
going on
the
there?
PE on my screen. It
Right,
is
okay, sorry.
as of as it probably is about 15 actually, because if it was at
Right, okay.
20 in March, that was back
Okie
here.
dokie,
Yeah, I reckon about 15.
right. So I'm not going to go into the details about National Grid here, right, because you all know about it. I am going to talk about a segment that most people do not know about, do not realize. And if you do, because you've researched this company, it's the Yin Yang, and you know exactly what's going on here, there's a segment here which I did not know about. So I'm not just saying that you didn't know about it, therefore you're stupid. I'm saying I'm stupid. So I should have known this bit here. They have a New England segment, Henry, that
They
includes
do.
electricity distribution networks. And I'm not saying New England as in, out into the wilds and the green spaces of the United Kingdom. I'm talking about the US.
Yep.
Yeah. The New York segment includes distribution networks, high voltage electricity transmissions network, and gas distribution networks in New York. Yeah. The National Grid's New England segment is dedicated to enhancing the reliability and safety of energy delivery networks in the region. The company's commitment to community engagement is evident through the various outreach projects that they do. So they're doing this work and supplying energy to the New England segment, and includes high voltage transmission networks and gas distribution networks, which play a crucial role in the overall energy infrastructure of the region. Now, given what the US Department of Energy is saying regarding the needs of energy and consistency of energy, I think even that little segment, which is obviously a little segment at the moment regarding them, could grow significantly. And more importantly, Henry, you're on exactly the right page, right? The activity breakdown for National Grid, which everyone thinks is a UK focused business, says what exactly? It's saying their turnover is now superseded by the US of 69.1% to the UK, which is down at 30.9. Now, until today, I did not know that. Embarrassed to say I didn't know that,
See,
Henry, because I'm
I
thinking,
did know that
nah,
because this
National
is
Grid's
one
always been
that.
our National Grid, and therefore that's where they make all their money.
No.
Absolutely, categorically wrong.
Yeah.
So most of their money is being generated from the US. Two-thirds and more being generated from the US. If they are not going to grow significantly because of their exposure to all things AI and the data center, the energy that's needed over there in the US, I do not know. So that will definitely be a company that I will be buying if I see a slump or any sort of issues going on.
I
I'll
think
be
you're looking
all
at one
over
right
that.
now, Peter. I
Well,
sold this at
it's not
about
far off.
£14 a share, and it's
It's
down
not
at
far off,
12.
mate. It's
You
not
know.
far off, mate. Not far off. I'll be buying that, and I'm thinking about it long term. Because the CAGR wise has not done much over the past 5 years. And I think that US segment is only going to get bigger for them. Yeah,
Depends where
and
you've
by the way,
bought it.
folks, the stocks I've, by the way, folks, the stocks I've spoken about thus far, I do not own any of them. This is just for illustrative purposes, me and Henry having a back and forth. You, ladies and gents, go away and research them. Yeah, tell us what you think. Retweet, repost, comment. Let us know your thoughts regarding the stocks I've talked about thus far. Go, Henry, what are you saying about that bit? Sorry.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think for me, this is a business that's investing in something that we are going to need more of. So you can look and you can see on the quality metrics here, return on capital employed's never really been great. It was heavily negative back in 2006. And they go through these CapEx cycles. They borrow
Yes,
loads
they
of
do.
money, they dump it into the grid, then they have to build out transformers and substations and cables and whatever. And their returns just collapse. But then over a long period of time, they're actually fairly steady. It tends to be 5 to 6% because the government caps how much they're allowed to make. So they can't go making 50% profit margins. But likewise, they know roughly how much demand they're going to have as well.
Absolutely, they do.
Now, we're at the beginning of another one of these capital deployment cycles. Only last year, they raised an absolute fortune.
Yep.
To invest in the grid. And so I think actually, as the price starts to come down a little bit, if you were interested in buying something like National Grid, this really is the time to be buying a little bit of it, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's definitely worth considering and tracking to see when it reaches whether it be a 2 year low or a 1 year low. I would be all over that. If it got to 10 sub 11, I would be definitely considering it
I don't think
with a
it'll
long
get
term
back
view.
down there. I mean, I was
It
buying
might
it at
not.
around
You
that.
you're sitting here with a 4%, 4.1% forward yield whilst you wait to see what happens to it next. Yeah, if you do me a favor, Henry, if you go to the chart, please, a proper chart on it. Yeah. So you're looking at, actually, it's been quite steady. Steady progress since 2021. Up and
I
down,
mean,
up
if
and
you
down,
look at
volatility.
it,
But the last few years, it's accelerated because of this need for additional energy and growing their US segment. So yeah, so not a bad stock to definitely consider and go and investigate, folks. The last thing I will say about it, results came out on the 14th of May last month, and the reported financial performance for the year up to March 31st of 2026, underlying earnings per share grew at 8% at a constant currency rate. Yeah. So yeah, driven by record capital investment of 11.6 billion. Yeah. So they're, like you said, they've invested heavily to generate that EPS of 8%, and they're looking to compound going forward at 10%. Yeah. Anyway, I wanted to go, can I just go now? I'll leave you to do the rest of
So, ladies and gents, if you didn't know about the energy grid, I think you're probably all powered up now.
Right. So go away, research, retweet, repost, comment, let us know your thoughts on those energy plays and which ones stand out for you, which ones you like, which ones you already hold. And want to hear from those individuals as well who bought Centrica at the lows,
No, I
yeah,
don't
or
want to
near the
hear from you. I
lows.
don't want to hear from you.
Oh,
Just
sorry,
go
Henry doesn't
away.
want to know
Go
about you, but I
away.
want to hear
You
from you.
chummy
I want to hear that
dodges.
people don't need to go across the US to go and buy everything. They can buy some multi-baggers here. That's what I'm trying to say, Henry.
Yep.
Right. Whew. Right. Should we do have a break here, Henry?
Yeah, I think so.
Have a little breather and then we'll get back to the AI stuff. Right. I'm going to share with you, and I've confirmed and clarified and discussed this with Henry. Six names which we've got that we would like to celebrate and share some goodwill because they've given us some goodwill regarding sharing the podcast, commenting regularly on the podcast, retweeting the podcast, and generally just being good eggs for continually supporting us regarding all the different things we talk about on this pod, on YouTube, on X, and some of them even go as far as talking with us on LinkedIn, which I, until a couple of years ago, would never have posted the podcast on there. But the professionals love us over there. And some of them have inquired and contacted and connected with yours truly, Mr. Henry Viola Hare. He's now famous on LinkedIn, ladies and gents. So if you're not following him, you should be following him on LinkedIn. Right. So the first out of our little giving back, because everyone knows I'm big on the mindfulness giving back thing, is our dear and beloved friend, Mr. Terry Vaughan in Wales, who only listens to us now on YouTube. And since we've been adding the share screen, he's like a pig in clover, isn't he, Henry? So happy. Yeah. So one month subs.
I think Terry is probably the first comment I get anywhere from any platform every single episode, and probably has been for, I think, probably since I joined the pod 3 years ago.
Yes. Yeah. Definitely. Definitely about 3 years, mate. He's been doing that regular as clockwork. Yeah. So he looks forward to it. He gets a notification as soon as it goes on and he's listening to it first thing in the morning and bang, he's there with the first
Love
comment.
it.
So
Always love his
Terry Vaughan,
comments.
we have got 1 month subscription to ShareScope for you, kind sir. An individual by the name of Mehrdad Yousefi. He's at my21 underscore Oracle on X. regular individual that retweets and comments about the podcast, less comments, but definitely retweets them a significant amount each time the pod comes out, especially via my account. We've got Mr. Games Workshop. I think he knows what his name is here. Matthew with a single T. Don't ever get that wrong, people. He will, give you a bit of grief. Matthew Gregory at Matthew Gregory 5 on X. 1 month subscription of ShareScripts coming your way, sir. Lovely lady by the ticker handle Jarvie55 at Jarvie55. Subscription 1 month goes to you. At Richie F321 on X, subscription goes to you as well. I think I'll let you do the last one, Henry, because you've had probably more interactions with this individual than I have.
Well, the very last one that we've got on the list is Grayling, Tench Blank, who has regularly commented, liked, engaged, not only with the podcast. I'm a little bit biased on this one because he also reads my blog from time to time.
Ah, I see. I see where the bias comes in.
But I would just say that all of these individuals, it honestly means a huge deal to both Peter and myself that you are so lovely in commenting and retweeting. And it's not about doing it every time, although many of you do. It's about the thought that you put into the comments as well. We get comments about the content that we've put out and the guests that we've had, and we get questions and we have dialogue. And that really, really does make this whole exercise, it really does bring something extra to it. So thank you very much.
Absolutely, absolutely spot on, Henry. And I think, well, I know full well that this support enables us and energizes us to continue with it, because it is a lot of work and it's a lot of research. Henry's got a full-time job, a significant full-time job that takes up a lot of capacity, a lot of time. And then every 2 weeks, the 2 weeks seem to come around even quicker. And he's like, sorry, we're doing it tomorrow. I'm going, yeah, Henry, it's been 2 weeks. He's going, oh my gosh. And he has to find the energy to come on here again and do this thing with me for another hour or so, or even 90 minutes on occasion. So I really, really appreciate you guys supporting us and supporting Henry for him to continue to do this with me and to continue with the podcast. Right. Last but not least, Henry, we have to talk about the FT Financial Literacy Inclusion Charity Fundraise. A new page has been set up, ladies and gents, regarding the financial charity campaign we're doing. We'd love for you, ladies and gents, to support us with this. We're nearly halfway through the year. We're sitting at £1,590 raised thus far. Our target is £5,000. So if you guys have got £5 or £10 to spare or more, please, please, please show your support again by continuing to drop the odd donation as and when you can. Or if you haven't done a donation before, please, if you've listened and you've interacted and enjoyed any of our pods, please consider making a donation to our Just Giving page, which is www.justgiving.com/page Twin Peaks Investing Podcast 2026 Mark Bentley. It is being raised because of and in memory of our dear friend Mark Bentley, that did a significant chunk of work with ShareSoc regarding financial education and supporting financial campaigns and investment campaigns for investors. So that's the reason why we're supporting the FT Financial Literacy and Inclusion campaign that supports financial education in schools. Henry, any thoughts regarding that campaign, which what we have been doing so far?
Only that, in the spirit of engaging with the podcast, it would mean a great deal to both of us if those members that have already donated, and there have been quite a few of you, if you could take 5 minutes to take that link and put it out on your own social media networks, retweet it, try to build a little bit of momentum with it, because we've had a little bit of a lull the last couple of weeks. And I don't necessarily think it's because people don't want to donate. I just think that if it's not front of mind, it doesn't get done. And so actually you retweeting this, reposting it, putting it out on LinkedIn will get it in front of people. And you know, if you can, don't just do it the one time. Maybe come back in a couple of weeks' time and do it again, you know, in July and August, and just try to build a little bit of momentum around it to help me and Peter raise the visibility of it. Because, you know, we are quite passionate about trying to do some good with the podcast. It's not just about us sitting here being on the screen and talking about making money. It's nice to be able to give something back to the community. And the FT Financial Literacy and Inclusion Campaign is something that I'm personally quite passionate about. I wouldn't be on this podcast if I wasn't. And so anything that we can do to support financial literacy in the UK, I think is a cause very much worth giving to. So anything you can do to raise awareness in addition to the donations, very, very, it will be very, very much appreciated.
Very well said, Henry. Very well said. And we look forward to seeing you, ladies and gents, regarding your support across social media. So thank you ever so much for that. I'm going to have a break now, Henry. And over to you. You're going to continue the AI discussion whilst I have a little snooze, mate. Yeah.
Excellent. I hope I don't send you to sleep, Pete.
No, you won't send me to sleep. I'm just knackered. off you go, mate. Off you go.
So if we go back to the beginning of the episode, just as a reminder, we've got these layers of the AI economy. So we've talked about energy to death, right? We've got the grid powered up. We've got gas turbines going and nuclear power stations and all kinds of interesting things. The power's now plugged into the national grid. Where does it go next? Well, we've got data centers. And those data centers run software models. And those software models power the consumer apps that you and I use. So I was thinking about, you know, those apps that we all know and either love or hate, ChatGPT, Claude, Gemini, they're American. As far as I'm aware, they're all American. There are no UK listed equivalents. There are no UK private equivalents, as far as I'm aware. But there are AI adjacent software tools that are listed. And so the first one I'm going to talk about today is a bit of a UK tech darling. It is the Sage Group. If I can find it, here we are. The ticker is SGE. Now, Sage, for those of you that don't know, is a UK-based provider of accounting and enterprise resource planning software, predominantly sold to customers in the US and Europe. It was founded all the way back in 1981, and historically, it sold what's called on-premise software products with perpetual software licenses. So basically, you bought a package, you installed it on a machine in your building, you owned it, you paid for it once, end of problem. But the world has changed. People don't want these big bulky machines in the corner of their office or in the basement or wherever. What they actually want is access to the software and the benefit that the software brings without the cost of running the machinery that provides the software. And so Sage has been transitioning towards what's called cloud connected and cloud native products, sold via the infamous, depending on your point of view, software as a service contract. And this is where effectively a company will pay for user licenses in perpetuity. So your accounting department might use Sage. 25 years ago, you would have bought the Sage program, you would have installed it on the laptops, it would probably have cost you a few thousand pounds, and then you'd have forgotten about it, and it would have worked as long as you wanted it to. Now, however, you have to pay for a license for every member of your accounting team every month for as long as you want access, which is a great source of revenue for Sage. And it also enables them to have a perpetual cash flow to reinvest back in the software so you can continue developing it. Now, their main cloud product includes Sage Accounting, which is for small businesses. They've also got something called Sage Intacct, which they acquired in 2017, which is for slightly larger businesses. And those members of the accounting profession that listen to our podcast, I'm sure you will understand the differences between the accounting requirements of a small business versus a medium-sized enterprise. Now, Sage isn't really a speculative AI company. It's an established accounting, finance, and payroll software business. The AI opportunity sits in ordinary business workflows, things we've all heard of: invoice processing, closing the month-end accounts, cash flow forecasting, providing financial insights to the management team, operating your payroll, etc. Now, you can enable AI productivity through the Sage platform. There are bolt-ons that you can pay to improve these workflows. They don't replace the workflows. They don't replace the staff interpreting them. They don't replace the software that's actually running the mechanics. It's a supplementary service powered by AI. And so the key question for me really is whether Sage can use AI to increase client retention. Are clients more likely to stay with Sage with the advent of AI if it's more powerful, if it's more useful? Can they maybe increase their profit margins? They've already got cash returns of 20%, which is, fairly chunky. And are customers going to be getting more value over time as a result of having an AI layer embedded in the software? I think the answer to that question is probably yes. The market disagrees with me right now, as you can see on the chart. The shares have come down from a high of about £14 a share. They're currently sat at £8.50. So the market clearly thinks, nope, that's it. There will be no Sage software in the future. We think no one's going to use it. Everybody's going to run their bookkeeping through ChatGPT, run their payroll through ChatGPT. That'll be the end of it. I'm not so sure. Thoughts, Peter?
It's a very interesting business, Henry. And if anything, they were at fault going back to pre-lockdown for not utilizing the what was deemed to be technology as much as they should have done pre-lockdown. And then subsequently were a little bit lethargic in their utilization of AI within their accounting and workflow systems. And once they started incorporating that more, you can see what's happened regarding the negative, regarding the charts there in 2022. And then it's had a really, reasonably, really good run up until what you're looking at, the latter part of 2024. So a good 3 year run. And now, or more recently, what's happened is the question of the SaaS apocalypse. Yeah. And whether or not they are going to be one of the incumbents in that space that has their lunch eaten. So I think if you go out further regarding the chart, Henry, on the proper chart, and go to 10 year chart, you can see that it actually didn't go anywhere for a good five of those years, up to from 2016 up to almost 2022. It was just moribund, trapped in a trading range. And what they were started talking about there after 21, 22 was about we're utilizing more technology, we're utilizing more technology. And they took off because they saw the opportunity there regarding technology. But then AI's then accelerated, and I'm not sure they've utilized it enough. And some of these incumbents, or sorry, some of these smaller entities that have come in. Well, not small anymore, are they? The market caps of them are dwarfing some of what's going on. And the Claudes of the world, Anthropics of the world that people are talking about, ChatGPT, etc., are answering and doing a lot of the work that they were doing before. So the question
I've
is,
got to challenge you on this one
well, you kind of look
because
forward to it. The need to utilize AI more is what I'm trying to say, Henry. And they have started to do so, and therefore the actual share price decline of the last 2 years could be overdone. This is what I'm trying to say, Henry.
whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer: the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code Twin Peaks. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe today using the Twin Peaks promo code and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
So, latest trading update.
Accelerating AI. There
first
you go,
half
see, accelerating AI.
Double-digit revenue growth, margin expansion, and strong cash flows. This, to me, says that they've seen the opportunity with AI and they're grabbing it with both hands. Now, what the SaaS apocalypse is about, as I understand it, there is something called vibe coding. So I know absolutely no coding language whatsoever. I wouldn't know how to code if I was hit in the head with a coding manual. But I don't need to anymore, apparently, because something called Claude, I can talk to it and I can say, build me a piece of software that does my bookkeeping for me. And it generates the code, supposedly, it generates the code. And it then tells me where and how to install the code on some sort of software. And I can build Sage software myself just by talking to Claude. Wonderful, right? Sounds amazing. Only thing is, do you think Claude let you do that for free?
Nope.
Nope. They're charging. And if Sage charges you, oh, I don't know, £10,000 a year, let's say, for your accounting department, to have access to Sage software, do you really think that Claude are going to charge you less to build a replacement tool? I'm not so sure.
They definitely won't. And they'll charge each person within the team.
Exactly.
Access for that.
And I think a lot of people that are currently getting very, very excited about vibe coding, which I agree, it is an amazing feat of technological engineering. Don't get me wrong. But I don't think it's going to be given away for free. And so I think you're going to find an awful lot of companies trying to get rid of software as a service type tools and finding that all they are doing is replacing one name on their invoice list with another and not actually saving any money at all.
Good shout. I completely agree with you. And no doubt you know, because you're working in the city and the organization that you work in, you see a lot of that. So we must. And they're going, uh-oh, what's the return on this massive investment? And how many people are actually utilizing it?
Yeah.
That's a conversation that's being had now, isn't it?
Yeah.
We've implemented it for 400 staff. Okay, how many of them are using it? Five.
Yeah.
What? We're paying for 400 per month, per year. And
it's much easier for somebody like Claude to sell to Sage and say, look, we'll enable interesting things for your customers, you pay us, than it is for them to go, we'll go directly to an accounting department and try to convince them to rebuild your software with us. Hope we don't get it wrong. Hope that we don't incur any liability if your accounts are incorrect. Hope that we don't get sued when the payroll goes wrong. You've got all that sorted out. You've got 40 years experience figuring this stuff out. Tell us what else you'd like to provide your customers and we'll help you. So I think actually the market's getting this a bit round its neck, as it were, with the SaaS apocalypse.
Because the media are telling them that these are the stocks to go to, and you've now got Anthropic and OpenAI looking to IPO at some point in the next 12 months at mad amounts of money. You go to the summary page for Sage. What's the market cap of Sage now?
It's 7.7 billion.
7.7 billion, right? What's that going to be? That's going to be like 1% of the market cap of Anthropic by the time it finishes, if that. Maybe 0.5%.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's going to end up being
a trillion dollar
market cap company.
Yeah.
$1 trillion. OpenAI, similar. Crazy valuations.
Crazy, crazy stuff, mate. Crazy stuff.
I'm conscious of the time, Henry. You've got a few more to get through, so I'll try to just keep it sweet. And
so I've got one other I was going to mention. Well, two others. One is Computer Centre. The ticker's CCC.
Okay.
Now, this is a name that, again, It's done pretty well, actually. If you look at the last 2 years, up 37%, up 41%. It's a £4.3 billion IT infrastructure services provider. It advises organizations on IT plans and manages their infrastructure. So they offer support, they offer devices, they offer applications and data. And they basically support organizations with IT consultancy. So implementing and operating IT networks, the laptops, the servers, the connections, the Wi-Fi setups, the data center infrastructure, connecting to the cloud, this sort of thing. Now, Computer Center doesn't build foundational models. You're not going to find an app on your phone called Computer Center AI. It's not going to produce a chat GPT model. But it helps large corporate and public sector customers to source, transform, and manage technology infrastructure of solutions that might include things like ChatGPT and Claude AI. Now, it also includes the mundane side of AI infrastructure, the servers, the networking, the storage, the procurement, the deployment of those servers. This stuff doesn't just spring into existence because a guy sits in a boardroom and says we should go into AI. A lot of people have to do a lot of work to get these things functional. And I think Computer Center is going to have an enormous growing work stream of work from firms implementing AI solutions in the future. Now, if you look at their full year 25 results, which I think I can pull up on the screen. Here we are, trading update. So they've continued strong momentum in North America and delivered an excellent first quarter, reflecting a record product order backlog position. More people than ever have got orders with them, and stronger than expected hyperscaler customer volume growth. Now, hyperscalers are the data center providers, which means that their technology sourcing and professional services arms are growing, at a rate of knots. The UK has also achieved excellent growth in technology sourcing. More people want to use AI tools, therefore, you need the hardware in order to actually access the tools. So companies are calling up Computer Center and going, right, we want new laptops, we want new servers, we want new storage devices, we want new Wi-Fi routers to route all the data. Help. So I think Computer Center's one that has got a bright future ahead of it. It's up 41% year to date. It's had a little bit of a pullback recently, but it's got a 20% cash return on capital employed, 2% yield. It's got forecast earnings per share growth of nearly 15%. This is a business that looks healthy to me, and it's one I've got on my watch list. I don't own it, but I have got it on the watch list.
Yeah, and it's got no debt, Henry, which you I know you like. The return of capital invested there as well is really, really good, and has gone up on average over the last 3 years as well. So that's good. I'm a bit annoyed with this one, Henry. It's a great company that you've spoken about there. I've dismissed this company over and over again and over again without researching it thoroughly, because I've always dismissed it as a tawdry, slow moving, shares never go anywhere, IT reseller. Nothing exciting. What's so exciting about reselling other people's products? But clearly they've shaken things up over the last few years. When I look at the list of people that they've got that they're working with, which they've now titled boldly Powerful Partnerships. Arista, Dell Technologies, Hewlett Packard, Apple, Lenovo, to name but a few. They've actually got to a stage now where they're actually the number one IT reseller, the number one. And worst of all, Henry, they're from Nottingham. They're just down the road. They're HQ'd in Nottingham. And I like to support Midlands businesses and all the rest of it. And I've just dismissed them now. They're not going to do that much. So I'm not sure what's happened the latter part of 2024 for them to suddenly go up, what, almost 100%? What is it? Nearly 100%? Nearly 100% from their lows in 2020, late 2024, because I've missed all of that. Missed all of that because I was like, yeah, little reseller, so what? You know, and they're not that little anymore because they're what? They're a FTSE 100 company now.
Yeah,
£4.3 billion. 4 billion, 4.3. So, yeah, I'm annoyed. I've ignored them and shouldn't have done. And that little bit of news in the news section there, and we dated the 28th of May, the little news segment. What did they do? They went and bought US federal government IT reseller, a little bolt on. Yeah. So, may not look like much. But incrementally, it's not a bad move to get in there with government, with a government federal in the US federal government market. Eh? So a nice little bolt on there. Oh, well, missed it, mate.
Happens to the best of us. I like I say, I don't own it either. But this is the thing about investing in AI. You don't have to go and spend a fortune buying loss-making businesses. These giant American IPOs that are coming out that are loss making, there are perfectly profitable UK listed entities that are benefiting from this spending, that are nowhere near as risky as going and buying something like ChatGPT when it eventually launches, or Anthropic, you know, on a sky high price to earnings ratio, loss making, indebted up to the yin yang. And no real plan to get out of that other than hoping that we get more customers in the future.
Yeah. No. Really, really good call on ticker symbol CCC there, Henry. And you know what sticks out for me there on that chart there that you've got, the critical performance thing, is that they did 37.9% last year. Not that many people are talking about it or hold it. And already we have not concluded 6 months of 2026, and it's up higher than it achieved in the whole of last year. At 41.1%. So it's already accelerating again this year, despite coming off the boil in the last week, 2 weeks or so. 41% year to date. And I don't see that many people talking about it. It's not on the podcast where people ramp stuff. It's not being ramped by the individuals that ramp stuff. So no one's talking about three C's.
Yep.
And you know what? Conquers three rhymes with the CCC. So I should have had that stock, mate.
If that's your investment strategy, God help you.
No, it's not. Intrinsic value is what it's all about, mate. Right, we're going to go to another stock in a minute that you're going to get, but I need to congratulate you, Henry, because you mentioned in November a stock, which, is it this week or last week?
Taken over. Yes, Tate & Lyle.
Tate & Lyle, the ingredients company. A fantastic premium on that, mate. I had to just give you a shout for it because it's been neglected, and then
last
November time
down
near the
here.
Near the bottom as well.
No
in November on
it.
The pod, you talked about it. It was I wrote the price. I think it was sub £3.95, and now it's being taken over, plus dividends at £6.15.
Yeah,
you know. So, bravo to you, sir.
Thank
Absolutely
you very
smashed
much.
It. Absolutely.
Thank you
fantastic
very much.
Fantastic call. And because you were on the pod talking about it, of course, you didn't own it, did you?
No, I have no position in Tate & Lyle.
I didn't own it, and I don't own it either, mate. So I hope some of our listeners purchased it. And if you did
I do know somebody that does. Battle Bus.
Yeah. Well, we know Battle Bus, so congratulations to Battle Bus. But if you did purchase it, having researched it after Henry mentioned it, please give us a little shout or a little post and tell us that you bought it in late November or December after Henry commented about it, because we'd love to hear that. Right, Henry, time, mate. One more if you're going to do it.
Right,
and then
one
I'm going to
more.
Talk about
we have
else.
Got, and this is going to drive people bonkers, Raspberry Pi Holdings, the most volatile share you have ever seen, ladies and gentlemen. Look at this. We're up 62%. We list in 2024. It goes nowhere. It goes down. Then it takes off at the end of the year, up 62%. Then the market has some sort of breakdown and we drop 52% in 2025. But year to date, we are up 216%.
Amazing.
If I owned this, I would have no hair left. I would be...
What? Do you think I own it because I've got no hair in it? I don't own it.
I have never seen anything like it. The market clearly hasn't got a clue what this thing's worth. I mean, it's got the figures on this screen say an awful lot to me. A negative cash return of minus 15%, a positive return on capital of 10%. So we've got a paper return, but we're burning cash, and a negative free cash flow conversion of 154%. So this thing seems to be incinerating cash. We've got some nice growth figures, though. Earnings per share up 25%. Pre-tax earnings up 60%. These are nice, healthy growth figures. So it seems to be, I would suggest, perhaps in the phase of the business life where you borrow some money, you build some facilities, you don't get a return on those facilities for a while, but when you do, you are enormously profitable, one would hope. Now, before I say any more, what does Raspberry Pi actually do? It's not a baking business, ladies and gentlemen. It is a £1.8 billion company involved in the design and development of high-performance, low-cost, single-board computers and compute modules for industrial Internet of Things customers and embedded users, as well as educators and enthusiasts that want to teach others about coding. Now, this technology is absolutely fascinating. I've actually got one sat here on my desk. That
wow,
is a Model 1 Raspberry Pi.
Wow. When did you buy that, Henry?
2010, maybe.
Right.
2011.
Okay.
So this is a full-service computer. That little thing.
Amazing.
Bought it for, Amazing. It was £25, I think. Might not even have paid that for it. And the whole idea was that you were going to generate these low-cost boards that would act as a full computer to enable children to learn about coding. A desktop or a laptop is expensive. £25, however, everybody can afford £25. That little chip I just showed you, you can plug headphones into it, you can plug a monitor into it, you can put power into it, and then you can run it as a computer. You can plug a little mouse into it and off you go. It seems impossible. Now, over the years, they've developed another range of products. It's now more expansive. There are other things that these chipboards can do than just coding. But the core of the business remains the same: cheap, accessible computing. It expands, it spans the entire value chain as well. So not only do they produce these chipboards, they've got intellectual property around the development of the boards that they sell to other people and get royalties from. They design semiconductors for other businesses, and they've got electronic products, software engineering teams, and regulatory compliance teams. Now, this is, in my opinion, one of the most obviously AI adjacent growth names that we've talked about so far. It gives an investor exposure to low-cost computing used in industrial and embedded applications. You could buy one of these things, you could plug it into your manufacturing lines for £25. You don't have to go and spend £6 trillion with Oracle. You can get a British company and a British chip that will do amazing things for your manufacturing business.
How many would you need, though, Henry, for a manufacturing company
it depends
to actually utilize?
It depends what you're doing with it. In fairness, but I guarantee you that the Raspberry Pi solution will be a fraction of the cost. It's all about edge computing. So somebody else, the data center, does the data processing. The large language model crunches the numbers or the text or the instructions. All that this little chip has to do is receive an instruction and then tell a machine to do it.
Right. Okay.
Now, that access is unbelievably valuable. And so, to me, yes, okay, this business is incinerating cash at a rapid rate, but think of the potential that this has got in the future. This, to me, and again, I don't own it, but this is a very exciting business for me. Now, they've also upgraded their forecasts multiple times. Earlier this week, actually, June the 5th, I think it was, their trading update.
Last week.
They've reported that trading in the first half of the year has been strong, with profitability materially ahead of the comparable period last year. Units for the first half are expected to be over 4 million, and adjusted earnings before income tax depreciation and amortization is at least $38 million. Performance has been supported by continuous growth in unit volumes, a favorable product mix, and the ongoing utilization of low-density DRAM inventory accumulated through 2025. Now, this comes on the back of multiple earnings upgrades. Go back and have a look. Multiple earnings upgrades. This business is going gangbusters. So, I don't make recommendations to buy or sell, but I will say that this is one I am watching very, very closely. And I hope I don't watch it whilst it goes up 10,000% and leaves me on the sidelines. But one I'm quite excited about, Peter.
Yeah, pop up the chart there, Henry, to just show what's happened in the last couple of weeks. Because after that news about another upgrade on another upgrade on the another upgrade on the 5th of June, 4th of June, the share price popped, I think, that particular day.
Went up 20% in
It's
a day.
yeah, it, and I was like, what? So yeah, it's just been accelerating, mate. The bandwagon is significantly being chased. And I'm not one for chasing stocks, but boy, oh boy, has that one taken off like a rocket. The Raspberry Rocket, it should be called, not Pi. So yeah, kudos to those that got in there early. If you've got in there early, let us know about it, when you bought it, how long you've had it, what your thoughts are going forward. But that's a really good shout, Henry. I'm sure we've mentioned it before on the pod, a little while back, but maybe we were telling people to avoid it when it was going down. I don't know. But definitely, definitely on the mend now. And people are loving what it's doing. So, yeah, good shout. Good shout on that one. It's basically gone vertical, hasn't it? Look at that from its lows.
It has. And if you look at the
That's
target price,
crazy.
the brokers haven't caught up. So
I haven't
either
caught
the
up.
brokers are right and this thing's now 50% overvalued and it should be
Yeah.
worth about £5 a share and it's
Yeah.
currently at 10. Or the brokers haven't caught up and it's actually worth £10 a share and all of a sudden we're going to have massive analyst upgrades.
Yeah. The crazy thing about it is, Henry, I look at some of the broker notes that come out, or the brokers' statements that come out, sorry, on X, and often or not, they're upgrading their targets because the company's been off, been got a merger stuff going on, or a takeover bid has happened, and all of a sudden they've gone, oh yeah, we'll put it at £5.95. The share price and the bid is at £5.95, mate. Thank you very much. It's
Yeah.
like they're so far behind, it's ridiculous. Right, okay. Conscious of the time, one last thing I've got to mention here. Two last tiny little things to mention here. One's more significant than the other. Is of we are now 2 months, no, two, 3 months, just shy of 3 months away from the Investor Summit. Ladies and gentlemen, 18th of September, we're going to have some significant individuals there. We're going to release some names next week, I think. We've got some significant sponsors. We're going to have lots of discussions regarding stocks, lots of discussion regarding investment trusts, financial education, tax, pensions. We might get an ETF person there. We might even get some people talking about the energy play there. We'll definitely have some people talking about tech, AI, etc. There's even conversation. We might even have some, wait for it, some Bitcoin discussion there as well. Yes, Henry's face is gone. But yeah, all things financial, all things with the best of the best in the city will be at the brewery, Chiswell Street, London, on the 18th of September. Get your tickets now while the early bird prices are available. I think it's £80. You're getting your food in the morning, your lunchtime meal, your drinks throughout the day, and essentially a free bar until it's drunk dry at the end of the day for £80 right now. Absolute bargain. So go and get your tickets. www.investorsummit.co.uk. Tickets is where you need to go. Just type in investorsummit.co.uk, go to the tickets page, purchase your ticket, job done. Then book your transport to get to London. If you're in London, happy days. Hopefully the tube will not be on strike. I need to mention one last thing, right? and this has been irritating me, because I keep getting this irritation, that irritation, that irritation from X, not just the way that it's gone up since Elon Musk has purchased it, but the fact now that I open the account in the morning, I leave it where it is, I come back, and the look of my account, the flow of my account has changed. So I'm not sure you've noticed this, Henry, right? You open your X account and it says for you, which means the algorithm can spit out whatever they want, and that's what you see. And if you don't change it to what the accounts that you're following, because you don't want to see all that, yeah, I won't use any choice words. If you don't want to see any of that stuff, you've got the people that you follow, and that's all you want to really see. And occasionally one of these people will post something you don't want to see, but that's part and part of the parcel, right? But you're underneath the accounts that you're following, it says recent and most popular. If you haven't clicked it down to look at what it's on, it could be on the most popular post of the people that you're following. So people that have got smaller accounts that really share some really insightful stuff, you will not see. Why? Because it's not as popular as the main stuff that the algorithm wants you to see. So have a look at your X account, and I guarantee you that there'll be some of you that have got stuff that you're seeing you don't want to see because it's showing you for you. And it'd be a greater number of you that are actually following the accounts that you want to follow, but actually the algorithm has clicked it onto popular rather than recent, as in showing you all of the stuff that you want to see from the accounts that have recently posted that you are following. So put it onto recent, not just the popular ones, and you will get more access to the content you want to see on X. I think we've covered absolutely everything on here now.
We've burnt
the midnight oil. Henry's ready for bed. Ladies and gents, it is 8:10 in the evening. Henry's had a full day at work. I've been running around like a madman with various different tasks and work as well. We hope you all enjoyed this podcast from Henry and I. Please let us know. Please reshare it, repost it, comment on it. Let us know your comments. As Henry said, if you can, share, post with your audiences and followers that you've got, the charity we're raising for FT Flick, in memory of Mark Bentley, share that as well. If you can make a donation, fantastic. That'd be really, really good of you to do so. But please follow Henry Viola Hare's account at HT Viola and interact with him and tell him what your thoughts are. The five names we read out earlier regarding the prizes for subscription to ShareScope, follow Henry's account, send him a DM as to where he can send this stuff to you, and we'll get ShareScope to send you 1 month subscription to your accounts. Okay. And next month we will run and we'll look at the accounts that supported us across mid June through to July when we do it. And we'll name another singular person and we'll do it again in August and so on and so forth. So please support us and we'll support you. Closing words to you, Henry.
Just thank you to everybody that stayed with us through this marathon of an episode. A huge thank you again to Joe Winkley for coming on the pod.
Absolutely.
Absolute gentleman. I do hope we can get you back. And thank you to everybody that's tuned in. And thank you as well to you, Peter, for being such a gentleman and for another excellent episode of the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast.
Thank you, Henry. Thank you very, very much. It's been an absolute pleasure doing this with you again tonight. And we will no doubt do it again in a couple of weeks' time. And I'm hoping to see you in the midst of this as well, because I'm planning to head down to London very, very soon. Got a few things going on down there. Ladies and gents, take care. I hope the sun comes back because it seems to be raining everywhere I'm going in the last couple of days. And you have what should be an enjoyable start to what is already summer. And we will look forward to hearing from you and we'll see you all very soon. And of course, Henry and I will be at the Investor Summit and we'll be doing a live pod there. We'll tell you more about the topic and what we're going to talk about nearer to the time. But until then, take care, look after yourself, show kindness to others and do what you can in your communities. Volunteer, donate, do what you can for others. Ladies and gents, that's it. It's a wrap. The marathon is over. All right, take care. God bless. Bye for now.
Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.